you look at the front of your bulletin, see this old guy marching out, stepping up. Last week I talked to you about children, and this week I'd like to talk to you about older men, all right? So if you're here and you're a guy and you're not an older man, just wait a little bit. It'll come on you in a heartbeat, and it just doesn't take an instant before the next thing you know, you're an older man. I've titled this Christian Character in Action. It's out of the book of Titus. Paul wrote to Titus. Titus was a new minister that Paul had went out and run around and planted these churches, and then he left Titus in charge of a couple of churches in the area. And he wrote a letter of instruction to Titus telling him what are the things that he should teach, what are some of the actions he should demonstrate with people. And he gave different age groups, and I want to share those with you in the coming days, in the coming Sundays. It wasn't too long ago that I told you that we were living in a post-Christendom society. Now, I explained to you at that time, not a post-Christian society, but we were living in post-Christendom. Now, the difference between post-Christian society and post-Christendom is Christendom means that the society no longer, society as a whole, looks back to Christianity to gain its way forward. It's like, you know, our schools. God was the center of the teaching in schools. We started out with prayer. We refer to God in many of our textbooks in school. And in our government, God was a big deal. Our dollars still say, God we trust, our currency does. How long we have that, who knows. But it still says that. And post-Christendom means that our society no longer, we are beyond God being the center of all of our rules and everything else. We have since moved from post-Christendom to a post-Christian society. Our society as a whole does not put Christ in its front, in its centerfold. I believe we're living in a pocket in this part of the country. Maybe especially in Defiance, because there are 42 churches in Defiance. I mean, a city of 14,000 people, 42 churches. I mean, that's unheard of. That's a huge amount of churches. So because of that, it flavors what our community believes in. 42 Christian churches, by the way. So it really flavors what that says, although some of our churches are turning to pluralism. You know what pluralism means when you're talking about matters of faith? That we believe in everything. That I'm okay, you're okay. You used to have a t-shirt with a picture of Christ on the chest of it, and it was him hanging on a cross with thorny crowns on his head, his arms stretched out, blood dripping down, and it said, if I'm okay and you're okay, then why did he have to do this? So I can tell you that a number of people tell me on a regular basis that they're of this faith or that. They tell me that they're Christian, they're Jew, they're Muslim, they're Baptist, they're Methodist, Catholic. But here's the word of the day, but I'm non-practicing. Do you know what non-practicing means? They don't go. I'm a Baptist, but I don't go. Every time somebody come up to you and say, I'm a baseball player. And you go, oh, cool. Who do you play for? New York Yankees? You do? Really? Yeah. But in more conversation with them, you discover that they don't really ever go to the ball field. And that they don't really ever participate with the New York Yankees. And then in further investigation, you find out that they've got a baseball club. It's an old one. It's somewhere, but they have one. And they actually have a baseball bat that they had when they were little baby. And they did actually play baseball one time, but it was when they were, you know, in Pee Wee League. You know what you call them? Well, you know what you don't call them? A baseball player. They just call themselves a baseball player. but they're not really a baseball player. So when somebody tells you that I'm a Jew or I'm a Muslim or that I'm a Christian, but I don't participate, I'm non-active, then you're not really, not if you look, if you're not playing ball, you're not a ball player. If you're not participating as a Christian, you're not a Christian. It doesn't work that way. I was told by a religious leader of our community this week that God is bigger than our different religious beliefs. That all religion is the same. Now, that's a lot different than saying all denominations are the same. I mean, there are a lot of people that believe in Jesus. There are Catholics, and there are Baptists, and there are Lutherans, there are Presbyterians, and there are Methodists. There's a whole group of them that believe that Jesus is the Christ. And yet, we're all the same. We believe in Jesus. But you take Jesus out of the equation, we're not all the same anymore. Because Jesus said that I am the way to the Father. No one comes to me except through the Son. And now, when you make a statement like that, you're one of three things. You're either a liar because you're saying if something that you're not, you know it. You're a fool because you're claiming to be something that you think you are that you're really not. Or you are who you are. And there's no middle ground for that. But today, in the name of... I'm not sure what we call it in the name of to not offend anyone, to be not offended. I don't want to be offensive. So in the name of not being offensive is that we tell each other, I'm okay, you're okay. It doesn't really matter. But you know, there's a word that says, if you don't stand for something, you will fall for everything. You ever heard of that? It's a saying. You don't stand for something, you'll fall for everything. I think that some people stand for everything, hoping to fall for something that would land them in heaven. But while they're doing that, they're doing it non-practicing because that's their preferred mode. The whole idea not to offend someone, the problem is that you're offending everyone who's standing for something. And those who are not standing for anything are offended by everyone who is standing for something. So there's no way when it comes to religion to not be offensive. It's offensive. It's going to be offensive. And moving forward in a post-Christian society, it's going to become more and more offensive for you to proclaim your faith or to live your faith out in any way. Okay, now I told you all that big old long story that you're thinking, who cares? What's that have to do with me? The reality has a lot to do with you because it's going to affect you as a Christian. But it's not anything new. If we think that, oh, we're moving into new grounds, and I've heard people say this, oh, the way the world's running, Jesus is going to come back in any minute because it's just so turned upside down. Hey, listen, folks, this was happening back in Jesus' time. Paul wrote a letter to Timothy because the same thing was going on in the area that Timothy had some churches. Here's what he said to do about it. Remember, Paul is a young, capable pastor, recently put in charge of 7 new churches. Here's what he said, or I said Timothy, I meant Titus. Here's what he said, Titus 2, 1 and 2. As for you, Titus, promote the kind of living that reflects wholesome teachings. Promote the kind of living that reflects wholesome teaching. Okay, what he was saying to them is that demonstrate your life in the way that teaches other people. And there are truths that we need to learn. In the King James Version, the NIV Version, the American Standard Version, the New American Standard Bible, and a whole bunch of other translations, call this wholesome teaching. They call it sound doctrine. Teaching, learning, the Greek word is didaskalia. Didaskalia, that is it. Didaskalia. It's a Greek word. And it literally means doctrine. And in doctrine, the word doctrine is used several times throughout the Bible. It's called doctrine. It's called teaching. It's even called learning. Teach what is in accordance to sound teaching. Or he said, live whatever is in accordance to sound teaching or sound learning. And teaching implies it's been put out there. I like the word learning better because learning implies it's taken up. It's taken upon you. My dad, from time to time, would say to me, Max, get over here. I want to learn you something. It's kind of an odd way of saying things. But that wasn't just a slang that he had made up and put together like a lot of other things were. He was very intentional when he said, I want to learn you something. You've got to pay attention because this was serious time for him. I want to learn you something. And what he was saying is that this that's coming right here is something important that I want you to pick up. I don't want to just throw it out there. I want you to pick it up. And he demonstrated it. If he's going to learn you something, it was something that he had been doing. And you want it was a principle of his life. Get over here. I want to learn you something. And when he said, I want to learn you something, it was because you had probably done something. He didn't like what you was doing, and he wanted to change the direction that you was going. And I think that what Paul was saying to Titus, I want to learn you something. And I want to learn you something so you can teach these other people the something that I'm learning you. And that's what he was talking to him about. Teach the older men to exercise self-control. Older men to exercise self-control. William Barclay says this about this passage of Scripture. He says this, over the years, the senior men must have acquired that cleansing, saving strength of mind which has learned to govern every instinct and passion until each has its proper place and no more. It's like a description of wisdom, isn't it? Teach them to govern their lives in a way that, you know what, that's like, you need to have control over these things that come upon your life. You know, there comes a time that we need to gather things up and get your stuff together, if you understand what I mean. And there comes a time when nonsense needs to be put aside because your life begins to get purposeful. And you know what? We don't talk about that with older men like it ought to be talked about with older men. And I think as I'm an older man, I need to put this out to my peers, the older men. We talk about when we get old, we use our filter. We lose our filter. How many of you ever heard that? We get, oh, he lost his filter, man. Don't pay no attention to him. He lost his filter. Listen, we use that as an excuse because we get mean-spirited. And we don't need to be mean-spirited. That's not what we need to do. This passage says that we should be gaining, building, and using more often our filters. Get it together, guys. Older guys, get it together. No one to be quiet, no one to speak, no one to act, no one to wait. Learn how to share the vast amount of experience in a way that others find palatable. Have you ever heard the word palatable? You know what that means? Good to taste. It's good. Others find it easy to take in. Older men ought to be that way. I've got a lot of experience. I was just thinking a little bit ago when I was standing here, Jason was praying, was getting ready for the offering. This thought went through my head. Why do so many weird things happen to me? I mean, who gets this? I mean, why do so many weird things happen to me? And it's just like over and over and over. Stuff like that goes on, like the eating the spicy chicken with grandma, which is like, who does that? And just all kinds of stuff in my life happens to me. And I wonder, geez, why does that happen? And I think that there are things like that that come into our lives, all of us. How many of you think, why do weird things happen to me? I mean, don't make me point you out. There's some of you in this room, I can point at you. And I know there are weird things happen to you too. Why do so many weird things happen to me? I think God's given us experience, guys. He wants us to have experience because we're called to pass things on. We're called to do that. You told me this morning, when I showed you my hair, You tell me that your dad, tell us what your dad did with your hair. He got a successful hair raise. Did you catch that? Say it, Bob, or I'll see. He said, this is what you're going to look like when you get old. And he cut the top off his hair, like his eyes long. And I thought that he was, you know, as I was talking, I thought that he cut the sides off his hair while he was cutting his hair, and then held a mirror up and said, look, this is what you're going to look like when you get old. But he left it like that, right? And he left it like that for like a day. So you're walking around with his head. I think stuff. Things happen in our lives to give us experience so that we can share those experiences with others. But you know what? If the older we get and we have this vast amount of knowledge, and if we just hog that to ourselves, if we get mean-spirited and hateful, who wants to hear it? You know, how it's not palatable. If you have a reputation of being a grump or a, you know, just a grouch, That's a bad deal. I did a grump. How many of you know that Jim Gremling's nickname is Grump? Yeah. How many of you know that he couldn't be further from a grump? I mean, that's one of the nicest guys I've ever met. He'll bark at you every once in a while, but I've never seen him bite. I think that we need to be careful. We've already gained a reputation, lose a filter. We need to erase that. That's not, we need to exercise self-control. Marty taught a class this past week to help us to know, listen to this, what, when, and how to conduct ourselves in having a conversation where stakes are high, there are opposing opinions, and there are strong emotions. And when you put those three things together, matter of fact, the book described it like this. When you get into a situation like that, when stakes are high, when they're opposing opinions and they're strong emotions, that your body naturally goes into the fight or flight mode. Adrenaline kicks in, and then all of your blood rushes to your hands and your legs, your arms and your legs, because the body naturally, in an adrenaline rush, goes into that fight or flight mode. Well, when you're in fight or flight mode, where do you need most of your blood? In your arms and in your legs. And so you're in this conversation where you went into fight or flight mode, and your blood drains from your brain, and you're left with the reasoning power of a rhesus monkey. And that's what you're beginning a conversation with. And Marty was teaching us about that, how to calm yourself down, get the adrenaline back down, so blood can rush your brain, and so you can have an intelligent conversation when you get into that kind of a situation. And when he was teaching that thing, Luann and I, we talked to each other and laughed and said, man, we should have known this 25 years ago. Wonder why we're learning this at this end of life rather than at that end of life. Well, maybe God was trying to tell me that, hey, Max, you need to exercise self-control. And here's something, a little something you can learn about when you go on in teaching that. But you know what? Marty promoted the things he was teaching, like Paul told Titus, promote these things by living them. And Marty taught that class by living them. Matter of fact, one of the most effective things he used to teach was his life experience. I mean, that just stood out to me. Holy cow, this is what Titus was talking about. That we need to not just talk about it, we need to live them out. Teach the older men to exercise self-control. Here's the next thing that Titus said. Teach the older men to be worthy of respect. You know how you get respect? You earn it. Respect isn't just automatic. You earn respect. Now, when I was growing up, we were told to respect our elders. But, you know, it didn't take me long to run into an elder that I knew was worthy of respect. Because they had earned it. Matter of fact, they didn't do any of this. They didn't have any self-control. They threw their filter away because they didn't care enough about it. They were incredibly disrespectful to younger people who were trying to be respectful to them. I mean, you just can't do that. You know how you get respect? You earn it, right? Somebody say amen. How you get respect is you earn it. You know how you keep respect? Earn it. Yeah. You don't just get respect, and then once you get it, you got it. Just go do whatever you want, act any way you want to, be disrespectful to other people. No, you get respect by earning it. You keep respect by earning respect. And you most earn respect by being respectful. And so we need to be worthy of respect. I think that's an incredible thing. So how do you be worthy of respect? Well, let me ask you this. What do you have to offer? So do an inventory sometime. What is it that I have to offer to the world, to other people, to those around me, God's put in front of me? What is it that I have to offer? And then ask yourself this, who are you offering it to? You just keeping it? I got all these things to offer. Who are you offering it to? Well, nobody's out like people. Well, you don't have nothing to offer then. How about this? How are you offering it? How about this? When are you offering it? You know, all these things gain respect from other people. There's no better way to earn respect than to share what you have. Listen, I'm not talking just about stuff, but to share your experiences. Find somebody in your life, more than just your buddy. Find somebody in your life that you can put right here. You know, there are some of us got 5 or 6 friends, don't want them all. Wish we didn't have 4 of them. You know what I'm talking about? We need to find something. You got to put somebody in your path to put right there. And here's what I've discovered through my years. I'm going to learn you something. The guy that God put right there is the last guy in the world that I wanted God to put right here. It was like, jeez, why that guy? I worked at Hartsall Money for about 13 years. And was Les hired this guy one time, the young guy right out of high school, and that wasn't a problem at all. But man, I'm telling you what, he didn't know anything, which wasn't a problem at all. I mean, we teach him that wasn't a big deal. But he tried to tell the boss that he knew everything. And he told the boss how good he was at everything. And the boss would come to the back of the shop, and he'd race over to something and work at it. Stuff would fly all over the place. He'd work at it like a beaver. Boss would go back up front, and that guy would sit down in the chair, just sitting there. And you couldn't teach him anything because he didn't want to learn anything. And then he'd tell on you if you did something that the boss ought to know, that you thought better if the boss didn't know. You know what I'm talking about? He'd race to the front and tell, hey, Buzz, you know what Mike did today? I caught him over there doing this. I'm like, you caught me? And that guy was like, he was tough to deal with. And at that time, I wasn't saved. You know, I worked at B.F. Goodrich, and I told the guys there in the shop, I said, you know what we'd do with them if he were at B.F. Goodrich? We would throw him a blanket party. That's where you go out in the parking lot, get ready to get in your car, somebody throws a blanket over you, and they just beat the snot out of you under the blanket. And, by the way, I don't recommend that. That's not a good thing to do. He pushed me to the limits. Then I got saved. God turned my heart around, turned everything around. I still didn't like that. I had a struggle with that guy. One Sunday, we're here in the church, and we had started the service. And I was up front here doing something, I was doing music or something, and our doors opened, and here he could walk right down the aisle of the church. And I thought, oh, man, oh, man. Is this the guy that God has sent to me because he wants me to here? And that was just like the first of 100. I bet you know what I'm talking about, don't you? Like the least likely person that you would ever choose to mentor is the one that God sends you. And I think that he does that. At least he does it with me that way, so that I can learn while I'm teaching him. So that I can be a part of that. This past week, we were at wrestling meeting. Eric was there. Eric coaches with Sonora High School. And he was going over to a mat that I couldn't see. There was a whole bunch of wrestling going on and different mats and everything. Went over to a mat that I couldn't see. And the kid that went out and wrestled on that mat, a kid from Tenora that Eric had taught as a little kid in peewee wrestling here at the church. And he just stayed here at the church as he got older and older and older. And that kid is really, really good now. Probably be a state qualifier this year. Nothing special. He is a state qualifier. He's really good. And he wrestled the kid from Tenora and just mopped the mat up with him. I mean, he just did what he did. And a little bit later, I had a chance to run into Eric and hold him aside where nobody could hear him. I said, Eric, I just want to know what it's like to coach a kid that you know is so good. And then as he's whipping the kid that you're coaching, you got to be thinking, a part of this is my fault. Because I'm all training. Did you remember what you told me, Eric? You said, I try to not get on the mat with one of my kids when he's there because I don't want to be put in that situation. You know, and that's something that here, this kid that you worked with, still do when it's not season time, but those are the ones that end up here. And you wonder sometime why this one. And I think that God has something for you on both ends of. So the idea is that older men need to be worthy of respect, need to exercise self-control, need to live wisely. Wow, here's what the senior men should have teamed, meaning come alongside of, should have teamed that the pleasures of self-indulgence cost more than their worth. Did you catch that? The senior men should have teamed that the pleasures of self-indulgence cost more than their worth. Yeah, I would say it like this. I'm not going to have anything to do with that because what it costs me is far more than I could ever gain. My dad would say, don't have no truck with that. Don't have no truck with that thing over there because, buddy, that'll cost you. And you don't want to pay for it. You know what I mean? What our society calls a young man that goes out and gets loaded, ripped, smashed, blitzed? You know what they call them? They call them partiers. He's a partier. Do you know what they call a 50-year-old man that does that? They call him pathetic. Two guys doing the same thing. One's a partier, the other one's pathetic. And there needs to come a time when you have measured the cost of something. They decided, is this worth the cost? I was a partier when I was young. And here's what I come to realize. I never once, ever said this. I'm glad that I got drunk last night. I'm glad because I've done this one good thing that I would have never done sober. I never, ever said that. Matter of fact, most of the time, I'd wake up the next morning. A lot of people tell me that they never remember what they did when they were drunk. I remember every detail. Either they're lying or there's different people than me. I know there are a lot of times I wish I wouldn't remember what I did when I was drunk. But every time I woke up and went, oh. And then I become a pastor and now I run into those people. And I go, oh. It's like you want to pull your hat way down. hadn't gotten, they got fat, my hair got gray, and everything changed. Most people don't recognize me. Or then you say, look, I'm walking proof of God's grace. What can I say? And they poke you right in the nose and say, just want to get even. So there's no better way to earn respect than to share what you have, teach an older man to live wisely. Put aside some of the things you know not good for you. Here's the last thing. They must have a sound faith and be filled with love and patience. Older men need sound faith, love and patience. I've learned more about my faith from experiencing life than anything I've ever studied. And listen, guys, I study all the time. I'm forever studying my Bible, studying the things of God. But I've learned more through the things I've experienced than anything that I've studied. Putting your faith to work will make it sound, make it strong. Now, this says, older men must have sound faith, love, and patience. How many of you have ever prayed for patience? Yeah, you're laughing. How many of you ever said, when somebody came to me and said, oh, I just have no patience with that child, and somebody says to you, I pray for patience for you, and you go, no, don't pray for patience. Pray my child will change. And that's not pray for patience. How many of you know when you pray for patience, that God gives you an opportunity to exercise patience? And then you say, man, don't pray for patience. God will give it to you. I believe this. The Bible says, what you ask for in my name will be given to you. And I believe you pray for something, it's yours according to the word. And a lot of times, the reason we don't have it is we don't embrace it. I believe when you pray for patience, God goes, patience, you got it. You don't believe it, so he gives you an opportunity to see you got it. And then if you don't believe it, he'll give you more opportunity, and more, and more, and more. Pretty soon you say, I got it. I got this patient thing. I got it. I'm there. So I think you ought to pray for patience, look for place exercise, because you got it. But it's like patience we don't want to do. We don't want to exercise patience. Love's the same way. You pray for God to give you love. You got it. If you don't believe you've got it, he'll give you an opportunity to love someone who is unlovable in a place of right in front of you. You know, it says the older men ought to have these things, love and patience. And you think an older man, the last qualities you look at in an older guy, somebody who's lost their filters, love and patience. But it's something that we're called to have. And guys, we need to step up to that, not step away from it. And I think that sometimes the reason that we don't have a reputation as older men for having those kind of things is we have denied the place that God has called us. In the Bible, you will not find any reference of retiring. In the Bible, you find reference of changing direction, changing purpose, changing calling. Find all kinds of references to that. You don't have any, there's no reference where it said, and Moses, when he got 80, sat down on a stump and started to draw Social Security and did nothing the rest of the life. There's no reference to that. We switch, we change, we move around. And I think the reason that Paul told Titus to teach these kind of things to the older men is the older men sat on a stump and decided to do nothing, and they are a tremendous value. They're more value than maybe they've ever been their entire life. Number one, they had experience that they never had up until this point. Number two, they had time and opportunity. And so, guys, as we get older, those are some things we need to look forward to. Now listen, if you're sitting here and you're going, well, man, I'm glad he's talking about himself and all these older guys, because I'm a younger guy. Hey, you blank and it's there. You're going to start practicing it now because of old. I went to sleep one night when I was young, and I woke up old. Old jumped on me in the middle of the night. When you're asleep, you can't fight it off. And it'll jump on you, wake up the next morning, and go, oh, Lord, what happened to me? And you get all fat, does the same thing. How many can testify to that? You, in the middle of the night, fat jumps on you. You wake up the next morning, you go fight it off because he's asleep. There you are. You know, say, Lord, he says, deal with it. You know, I pray that you take those words. What the need? Apply them to your life. We've got some things to do, and we're not done yet. We need to learn how to do them in a way that's effective. Let's pray. Father,